Let's Talk About is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Monday, November 16th, and as of today, according to Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun, Winnipeg is at 162 deaths due to COVID-19. This is thanks in large part to a massive upswing in cases. We were at zero cases very briefly in the spring into the summer, and cases have grown exponentially from there. It is thanks in large part to large outbreaks at personal care homes here in the city and in the province. Actually, today, the update of Scott's, actually this is from yesterday, 162, so it's gone up since then. I don't have up-to-date numbers. But 10 more people died yesterday, which was a pandemic high. And that might confuse a lot of people and say, why are you know, getting so worked up about it? That's 162 lives cut short. As a person who has a parent who has a compromised immune system that is working in healthcare, as a person who has an autoimmune disorder, as a person who has elderly family members, friends with chronic conditions, it's concerning. This episode is going to be, they deal with some difficult topics because we're going to talk about length of life versus quality of life. And I know a lot of people are probably jumping in and saying, oh, well, a millennial talking about quality of life. What do you know? Always wanting the great life instead of, just living a long life. Well, that's part of this, an important discussion. And it's tied into why we're seeing so many deaths in personal care homes and in long-term care facilities. To break down the numbers from yesterday, the youngest people to die in the province are two women in their 40s. The oldest was a male in his hundreds. 8 90-year-old males have died. 31 80-year-old males have died. 23 70-year-old males. 8 60-year-old males. 5 50-year-old males. 3 40-year-old males. That covers my father's age range, 50 to 60. A woman in her 100s, 31 women in their 90s, 32 women in their 80s, 13 women in their 70s, 10 women in their 60s, 4 women in their 50s, and 2 women in their 40s. That is 162 deaths that did not have to happen. and it's difficult for me to even talk about this right now, because it's difficult. It's scary to be in this province right now. This is my home, and I love it very much. And I really wish, and seeing the people in Steinbach, those aren't people from Steinbach, people in Steinbach at that mask protest. I really, really sincerely hope that your elderly family members and your sick family members don't die because of your incompetence. So why am I talking about this? Well, I was, again, trying to figure out what to talk about this week. And I was having a conversation with my girlfriend. And she's caring, her family's caring for her elderly grandmother. And they have been very worried about the rise in cases because they don't want her to get sick. And we had a discussion about long-term care homes because we were talking about the outbreaks. And one of the things that I haven't had family members in long-term care homes, but I've had a couple partners who've, their elderly grandparents have been in long-term care homes. And it's a contentious issue right now in academia. University of Manitoba has a center on aging, dedicated to studying the aging population in Manitoba. Dr. Laura Funk I've worked for her and with her on a few projects. I was her TA for a while, and we've had good conversations about the work that she does, and she works with elderly individuals and studies them. And she's been very vocal on social media, not just about the ongoing strike debate at university, but also the outbreaks at personal care homes. And personal care homes are at the center, or are part of, a large discussion about quantity or quality of life. Reading Goran Therborn's Killing Fields of Inequality, one of the major sources or points of vital inequality, which is inequality of life, mortality, and life chances, is longevity, how long people live. Across the globe, this has radically shifted. The conventional wisdom is that people are living longer than they ever have before. But this is not entirely true. There was a significant drop in mortality rates from starting in the 1990s up until the early 2000s. But it has since reverted back to those levels. And it's for a variety of different reasons. In Russia and multiple of the former Soviet states, there was a decrease in life expectancy and an increase in mortality. More people were dying due to this kind of shock therapy approach to introducing capitalism to Eastern Europe, where it wasn't the slow transition from socialism to capitalism or communism to capitalism. It was basically you open the floodgates, everything gets privatized, and you just go. You just get immersed in capitalism and you go. And there was a massive, massive, massive spike in mortality rates. Tons of people died. And actually, people were living, the life expectancy in Russia and Ukraine specifically dropped significantly in those intervening years, and has just barely reached back to its pre-1990s levels. And this is not just Soviet states. Canada has seen this. The United States has seen this. And it disproportionately affects marginalized communities. Conventional study or research on mortality and inequality has pointed to the fact that more people that are of a higher socioeconomic status, people of higher wealth, live longer than people of lower wealth. And there are multiple reasons for this. access to healthcare, access to healthy foods, prevention of growth stunting, stunting as in children who are born and grow up physically smaller and impaired compared to their better nutritioned peers. You have access to, as is important to this discussion, access to personal care homes and long-term care for elders. If you are affluent, you can pay somebody to look after your grandmother, after your elderly parents, somebody to feed them, make sure they're taking their medication, make sure they get outside, make sure that they take part in their hobbies, they have somebody to talk to. But people of lower socioeconomic statuses don't have that choice. Increasingly, middle-class families are reverting back to previous family structures because for hundreds and hundreds of years, multi-generational families were the norm. You would have the eldest generation, their children, and the children of that generation. So you would have three subsequent generations of a family living under one house. This still occurs quite often in Eastern countries, in Asian countries. So Japan, China, Korea, you have three generations of the family living together. So you have parents looking after their parents as well as their children. This is a structure of family that has had become out of vogue in the West for a very long time. You had parents living on their own for much longer periods of time, maybe downsizing, moving to condos or apartments, and then eventually into long-term care, into a care home, a care facility, where a family would pay a company to, or the government, to look after their elderly family members, and they would come to visit. And this did wonders for improving the longevity of people's lives. People were living longer than ever before because they had resources dedicated to keeping them alive. The history of modern society is marked by our increasing ability to keep people alive. Medications, vaccines to stave off things like smallpox and measles, medications to keep people alive, treatments to fight diseases like cancer, better access to nutrition so people don't starve, keeping them out of the elements. Education actually has a very strong link towards both income and longevity. You live longer because you are educated, you have access to better resources and knowledge and competencies that you would not have otherwise. It is not surprising that lower income individuals and less educated individuals do not live as long as their educated and affluent neighbors. They do not have the resources to buy healthy food, to know what is better for you, to have access to extra types of healthcare not covered by Canada's national healthcare plan. It's great that, you know, people have subsidized healthcare here in Canada, and I won't say free because it's not exactly free. You still have to pay for it, you just don't pay for it out of pocket. But increasingly, modern society has done a fantastic job of keeping people alive and living longer than they ever have before. We talk about in the 1800s, 1700s, all the way back to the ancient Greeks, people died in their 30s, their 40s, regularly, and died for reasons that we take for granted nowadays. You know, an infection would kill you, when here it's treated with antibiotics and you just go on with your life. It's not the reality around the world. People still undergo these things in less affluent countries and in developing nations. People are dying for things that you would never think of in North America. And like, that's not even to discuss anti-vaccine movements, but the point remains, society has done a great job of keeping people alive. The thing that it has failed to do is ensure that people are healthy and active and living in those extra years. Something Therborn discusses briefly, but it has a discussion that's brought up heavily in human enhancement and human modification discussions, is the idea of increased quality of life, enhancing the final years of your life. We certainly have diseases and disorders now that did not exist or had no knowledge of 100, 200, 300 years ago, because people simply didn't live long enough to understand that those existed. You know, the rise of things like dementia and Alzheimer's are relatively new because people are living long enough where these diseases can show themselves. A discussion in the human enhancement literature discusses the fact that evolution stops caring once you have children. The whole point of, you know, survival of the fittest is that people who, or individuals or animals, creatures who die before their ability, who die before they are able to reproduce, their genes and whatever the assumption is, whatever genes cause them to die, are taken out of the gene pool. You know, that's why we have the color eyes we do. That's why human beings walk on two legs, why we have the amount of hair that we do, why we're able to vocalize, because we have evolved that way, that the individuals who are able to do these things and had these abilities, had these traits, survived, and these traits helped them survive. However, in modern society, we have transcended our biology, and this is a discussion of transhumanism. I won't get too deep into it, but we have reached a point where biology is what we make it. We have increasingly come to become close to what Yuval Harari calls Homo Deus, man the god, because we are no longer bound by biology. As weird as that sounds. So we have things like Alzheimer's, which do not show up until you are much later in life, when you are well past your child rearing years. You know, people would die before you would ever know that they had Alzheimer's. So the genes that cause these conditions never had a chance to be weaned out because we never reached that point. You know, the people with these genes didn't have them, and they did not prevent them from reproducing. So they remained in the human genome for centuries, for millennia. And now we come to the modern day, where we are at a point where people live longer than ever. And we have reached a crossroads now. We have become so preoccupied with keeping people alive that we have not asked the question of, what is that life for? Long-term care facilities like the ones where people have been dying in droves during COVID-19 are focused on keeping people alive. Yes, they have programming where people can get out. And, you know, an ex-partner of mine, her grandmother was in a long-term care facility. I believe she still is, unless they pulled her out at this point. And, you know, they would have community time. They had we would sit there and talk to her about the upcoming week and all the outings that they would have and all the events that they were going to have. And it's been found in the literature that it's extremely important to give individuals, elderly individuals, agency and community. Not do things for them per se, do things that they physically can't do anymore, and surely care for them and make sure their needs are met, but ensure that they have agency and are able to make decisions and are able to interact with individuals and keep their minds sharp. And they will live longer and be happier. The happier a person is, the longer that they live. But we have been so obsessed with ensuring that people live longer that we are not caring about the quality of their life. You know, these individuals, yes, they have weakened immune systems because we have done nothing to solve that issue. We have done nothing. We're so preoccupied with ensuring that they stay alive, and we have put them in these homes to get them out of the way so we can live our lives, that we have no worry about what happens to them after that. And it's sad but true. I'm not trying to demonize people who put their family members in personal care homes. You are doing what you think is best. And you're trying. You are legitimately trying. The vast majority of you are trying, and I commend you for that. Nobody could have seen, well, people could have seen this coming, but nobody wants this to be happening. And the people that can't afford to put their family members in personal care homes, you're doing a service. You are doing the work to help somebody you care about and make sure that they live well. The discussion is not about intentions. It is about the system we have in place. And the system we have in place prioritizes longevity, medicating people, keeping them alive, giving them the bare necessities so they can breathe and live and make it to another year. We celebrate it when a person lives to 100 years old, and it's an accomplishment. But we find that people lose so much in the years that they're waning years of life. And there are ways that we have theorized to get around this. In the human enhancement literature, people like Alan Buchanan and Francis Fukuyama have discussed this. Jamie Metzl has discussed this. Modification of genetics or using medication or biotechnology in general to improve human competency and capabilities through the lifespan. So things like the system of writing, the internet, phones, being able to write down a letter and send it, to write something in a book and keep it for centuries, has exceeded our, and I've talked about this in previous episodes, but it has helped us transcend our own biology. We are no longer constrained by the squishy gray matter in our heads, because we are able to take the things that are in there, put them down on a permanent record, not to name drop Edward Snowden's autobiography at all, but we're able to create a permanent or semi-permanent record of this information. And it's actually, science and research has shown that it's actually we have evolved and our bodies have evolved to take in more information and to work better with these systems. You know, the fact that kids are so good with technology and can just pull out facts like nothing is not a new concept. It is just human beings continuing to adapt and know more things. You know, my generation and the generation after mine, we have a competency with technology that helps us transcend even further of what our parents were capable of, because we're able to make use of this new technology. And proponents of human enhancement will discuss things like using drugs like Ritalin to improve across the board, improve human functioning. If everybody was able to, you know, whether you're treating something, you're able to use these things to make sure the playing field is level. And I will, anybody that is interested, read the books by Alan Buchanan. Better Than Human is a great one, discussing how we can create equity and equality through biotechnology. So we can give people, through genetic engineering or through medication, through human computer interfaces, we can improve people's quality of life. Just think about the amazing work that Stephen Hawking was able to do, because he had the systems, he had things in place, just not just to keep him alive, but keep him productive in his life. You know, we forget very quickly that he was an exceptional human being, exceptionally brilliant, and so many resources were pumped into keeping him alive, keeping him cognizant, keeping him healthy enough where he could continue working and thinking. Imagine if we had that amount of effort put into every single person on this planet, every single elderly person. We were able to, you know, through medication or technology, ensure that they had they were able to keep hold of their mental faculties. They were able to, you know, they were able to physically keep up. We could stave off arthritis, Alzheimer's, osteoporosis. We were able to make sure that not only did people live longer, they were able to live longer. They were able to think and act and care for themselves. and remain autonomous for longer, remain functioning members of society for much longer. Often there's the great would you rather that always inevitably comes up. Would you rather have the, you know, live to 100 and have the body of a 30-year-old, or live to 100 and have the mind of a 30-year-old? It's a difficult concept because you're juggling your physical capabilities and autonomy with being mentally present. And it's an interesting discussion. I think anybody who's listening to this should have this, should think about that. Think about that scenario in your head. Would you rather be able to physically act, you know, if you're in your late 20s, early 30s, or late even late 30s, early 40s, would you like to continue to have the body and physicality you have until you're 100? Would you love to have mentally have the same capabilities until you're 100? Most of you would say yes. I don't know which side of the coin you would pick. I would much rather have the mental capabilities that I have now for the rest of my life, because I feel like that is what brings me the most joy in life. But it's a difficult decision to have. We are forcing people to live without either. It is an achievement that we have been able to keep people alive for so long. The fact that we have people who routinely live to be 100 years old is a marvel, and it is a testament to modern society. The issue comes from the fact that it is a gift that is unequally distributed in our society. Poor people do not live as long as rich people. Uneducated people do not live as long as educated people. People of color do not live as long as white people. People in Zambia don't live as long as people in Canada. People in Afghanistan don't live as long as people in Sweden. People in Brazil don't live as long as people in England. And you can get granular. You could talk about the variations in every country, internationally and intranationally. But the point remains that longevity and quality of life are gifts that are unequally distributed in society, and we need to start thinking about how we can equalize that. Just imagine if the individuals in these personal care homes were able to have physically the health that even they would have had in their 50s, in their 40s. Imagine how much better their lives would just generally be. Let's take COVID out of the equation. How generally great would their lives be if they were able to physically and mentally care for themselves and mentally and physically stick with the world they're living in? How much would we learn from them? How much would we get? This is what human enhancement proponents discuss all the time. How do we use human enhancement, biotechnology, gene editing to ensure that people not only live for a long time, they live well for a long time? How do we solve conditions like arthritis and osteoporosis and Alzheimer's, conditions that do not show up until people are usually in the twilight of their lives? Because it's not as simple as letting evolution take its course. It is much more difficult than that, and it is going to be a discussion we need to start having. And that's about it for today's episode. Sorry if things got a little bit heavy and a bit rambly. It's been a wild weekend and a wild day for me, so I just want to thank you very, very much for listening. This has been Let's Talk About. If you're listening live on 101.5 UM FM, you've got some great music and great shows coming up after this one. So stay tuned. Keep that dial on 101.5 UM FM. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. It means the world to me. I've been Jason. You've been the audience. This has been Let's Talk About. Wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands, and have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week.